seemingly bloodthirsty sprite with his ever-so-sharp sword, Edwin started to nod even faster as he continued his task. A short while later, the two friends were walking down the street and laughing. They found directions to the Whistling Hen easily enough. For some reason, the man who gave him directions winked like Calder had. Still not getting the joke, he and Sion just thanked him and strolled to the inn. A red hen was on the sign, with its beak pursed and musical notes coming out. As they walked inside, they were greeted with a wave of sound. Time had been moving on, and the interior of the inn was swollen with customers for dinner. A musician played some kind of stringed instrument, and several patrons clapped along. A large black pot hung over a fire, and a hearty aroma of vegetables and simmering meat permeated the air. There was definitely a stale beer smell in the air as well, but it was a lot better than some bars Richter had been in. It seemed like everyone was having a good time. More interesting, there was a mix of races in the inn. Though it was mostly humans, by far, there was a table of dwarves near the center of the room. He couldn't be sure, of course, having never seen one before, but the short frame, large muscles, and beards seemed like a clear giveaway. At another table, there was a taller woman with slightly pointed ears laughing at the joke of one of her human table companions. This was the world he had dreamed of, a world of fantasy melded with a world of hope and joy. And that feeling of contentment lasted right up to the moment that Sion drew an arrow with a snarl and aimed his bow across the room. The mood changed as first one, then another, and then all of the people in the room stood and drew whatever weapons they had available. A few only managed to fall on their face, clearly deep in their cups. Richter had his hand on his sword, confused, as he did not see any danger. He traced the line of Sion's arrow and finally saw the target of his friend's ire. A brown tunic covered a goblin the size of a scout. Richter mentally corrected, remembering Hisako's advice, was squealing in terror as he pressed his back against the bar, seeking escape. "Lower that bow!" a voice shouted. A large woman came from behind the bar holding a rolling pin. "If that arrow leaves your bow, we will rip you apart." She put herself in the path of Sion's shot. "Sion, put on your bow," Richter said. "We are guests here. Do not let your hate guide you. Is this what the Hearth Mother would want?" Sion glanced at him sharply, then relieved tension on his bowstring. He shoved his arrow back into his quiver in a smooth but angry motion. "Now get out," the woman spat. Richter raised his hands in appeasement. "I am so sorry that we have disrupted the love and peace of this place. What you have here is amazing. My companion and I have had a hard time. We have fought through many dangers and barely survived against a band of goblins that were trying to corrupt his home." "That is no excuse." "No, it is not, miss. I won't give you an excuse. My dad used to say excuses are monuments of nothing that build bridges to nowhere. I'm just a man who wants to offer an apology." Richter reached under his armor for a hidden pouch. Opening it, he fished inside and then withdrew an opal. Moving slowly, he made his way through the sea of hostile faces and past the woman who protected the small creature. He knelt, as the goblin shivered in front of him. Waiting until it looked him in the eye, he simply said, "I'm sorry," and handed the jewel to the goblin. Its shivers came under control, and it looked from the gem to him, first in fear, then in confusion and wonder. Standing, Richter looked at the woman again and met her eyes. He nodded once, and then shouldered his pack and turned to leave. Sion fell in step behind him.
"Wait!" the woman called. "Why are you here?"
There was still some anger in her voice, but it was tinged with curiosity. Richter turned back.
"I met a man named Calder, who said that this was a place we could come and be welcome. I know how ironic that sounds now."
The woman held his gaze.
"Do you promise not to commit any violence while you're under this roof?"
Richter opened his mouth to speak, but she said sharply,
"I do not need to hear it from you."
Sion stepped forward and said,
"I reacted. I did not think. My actions have brought dishonor to my hearth. My name is Sion of the Wood Sprites of the Forest of Nadria. I swear I will commit no violence if none is committed against me. Kvati relaravo.
Preparing to translate, Richter was surprised when the woman responded, "Tivol relati." Sion had said, "My life for my word," and she had accepted his pledge, "Your word for your life." The woman looked around and addressed all the patrons. They were still on their feet, unsure about the turn of events.
"Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have enjoyed your mid-dinner entertainment."
A series of chuckles came from all around.
"Let's start the music back. Next round is on the house."
"And the round after that is on me," Richter said.
More cheers followed his pronouncement. A grudging smile formed on the woman's face.
"Well, you sure make an entrance. Call me Rosie. Everybody does."
She extended her hand, but when Richter went to shake it, she moved forward a half-step and clasped his wrist. Her grip was surprisingly strong. With a firm shake, she released.
"Now, what can I do for you?"
"We need a place to stay, and I need to sell the goods that we have."
"You are merchants?"
she asked with obvious incredulity.
"Never really seen merchants wearing woodland armor before."
"Not exactly," Richter said with a small laugh. "What we really need are supplies for my village, and people brave enough to be pioneers."
"What type of people are you looking for?"
"I need the kind of people that can make a community. Carpenters, farmers, masons, guards, blacksmiths, etc. I have a village rich with resources, but need people to help me realize its potential."
Well, you can sell your items here, though if any are magical, you'll get a much better price in the capital. As far as the people that you are looking for, I'm sure you've seen that non-humans are treated as inferiors in Eve."
"Yeah, we just spent time in the ministry getting papers for Sion. That's actually how we met Calder. He guided us to the appropriate person."
"Well, I don't know if I explained it, but these rules are new. In the past, the kingdom had always welcomed the different races. Each worked together for the betterment of all. When the king died, though, his son listened to conservative advisers. He started to enact laws that slowly funneled power and wealth away from Eve's non-human citizens. The rumor is that it found its way into the pockets of the king and his friends. 10 years later, all non-humans are either bound to one place or bonded to a human. That's the significance of those papers you received at the ministry today. Now you are basically the sprite's guardian. Anything he does, you are responsible for. He is bonded to you."
"What is the bound option?"
"Basically like a work permit. Non-humans get hired under a human to work, but end up getting paid coppers on the gold. They also cannot move far from their job or they get thrown in jail, hence bound. You wouldn't believe it, but 30 years ago all races roamed the kingdom openly, sharing their ideas and cultures."
Richter looked around the room. "It seems like you guys are doing pretty good."
"But this is one of the only places in town where the different races mix openly. With the new laws, old hates have risen up. More and more humans are coming to despise anyone different from themselves."
Thinking of the younger gate guard, Richter knew he had already experienced this change in opinion.
"Well, you have told me what started your travels, but what can I do for you now?" she asked.
"We could use a place to stay for the night, and maybe an introduction or two if you can manage it."
"Done," she said with another smile. "Each room costs 3 coppers, but it has 2 beds and comes with dinner. Looks like Rat has made a good stew tonight. I trust you won't try and kill our cook again."
"The goblin is your cook? And his name is Rat?"
Sion asked in disbelief.
"Yes, and he makes the best stew in town. I think it's on account of the goblin's sense of smell. I'm sure we won't have any more trouble with you."
"I have agreed to keep the peace, and I will. If you say the food is good, then I will trust you. But is his name truly Rat?"
"Yes,"
she said with a smile.
"How did he get that name?" the sprite asked.
"You don't want to know," she said with the same smile. "Do you have any animals that need caring for?"
At Richter's nod, she continued.
"Well, it is another copper per animal. So you're interested?"
"I am." Richter liked her straightforward manner, despite their rocky start.
"Well then," she said, slapping her thighs. "Let me get you the key to your room. The stable boy will see to your mounts. The soup is almost done. Put your things away and then go buy some clothes. I don't know if anyone has told you, but you look a bit odd walking around in green armor."
Taking the hint, he and Sion followed her directions.
After dropping their things in their rooms, they headed outside. Rosie gave them directions to a nearby clothes shop that catered to multiple races. They were soon both outfitted with serviceable traveling clothes and several extra sets each. Richter wore black pants and a beige shirt, both of which fit over his armor. Sion decided to maintain his color scheme and wore a green tunic that fell over darker green pants. Now properly attired, they made their way back to the inn.
"Hello, my friends!"
A shout greeted them when they re-entered the common room. Calder sat near the stage where the musicians were performing. He waved them over to the table. When they sat, he raised his mug and drained it in one go. Not missing a beat, he half-stood and raised his other hand over his head with three fingers extended.
"Rosie, my love, three ales for three hard-working men!"
Rosie favored him with a faint smile and a roll of her eyes. Sitting back down, Calder looked at them with a smile.
"So, was Edwin able to help?"
"Yes, we have the papers for Sion, and we were able to help Edwin with that debt you owed him," Richter said wryly.
"Yes, well, sounds like everybody got what they wanted. You got your papers, Edwin got his coins, and I got the warm feeling of helping someone in need."
Laughing at the guard's roguish wit, Richter couldn't summon any irritation. The ales were delivered. The three men listened to the music and drank the slightly bitter brew. After time, three soups were brought to the table, and even Sion admitted it was a savory fare. They sat in quiet camaraderie as the hours whiled away. Patrons slowly trickled out until only guests and diehard drinkers were left. Rosie came to join them as the hustle and bustle of the inn calmed down.
"So what's your next step from here?"
Richter had listened to the conversations at nearby tables, many of them centered on the non-humans' discontent with the current course of the kingdom and dissatisfaction with their treatment as second-class citizens. "I feel like there may be many non-humans who have the skills I need and aren't quite happy with the life they're leading here. I know there are not enough people here in this town who can help me, but there just might be in the capital city. Do you know anyone that you could introduce me to?" Rosie's smile spoke for itself. As the conversation went on, Calder got up and whispered in the ear of one of the prettier barmaids. After placing a few coppers in her hand, she smiled and they slipped up the stairs to the sound of giggling. Richter furrowed his brow and looked at Rosie. She gave a hearty laugh.
"This is the whispering hen. For the right price, my girls will put their lips together and whistle you a tune. And you get to pick exactly where they do the whistling."
Well, Richter thought, smiling, this world certainly does have a lot to offer. Chapter 19, Day 35, Shaban, 23, 15,368 ABG. The next day, they sold the weapons and animal skins they had brought with them. The trader could not buy the ice staff, saying it was worth more than he had. He recommended that they take the staff to either a high-quality weapons dealer or a mage guild. What they sold only amounted to one gold coin and a handful of silver, but every little bit helped. Richter quickly discovered the conversion ratio of the coins was the same as the game. 10 copper made 1 silver, and 10 silver made 1 gold. He also learned that an average laborer made between 4 to 5 silver coins every 2 weeks, or fortnight as they called it. It apparently was just enough to live on. Just like back home, there was a well-defined and large rich-poor gap. Being a feudal society made it exponentially worse. Rosie told them that nobles and royalty controlled most of the wealth and land. Merchants and skilled craftsmen fell somewhere in the middle. Despite the slightly troubling social inequities, the good news was that the amount of money he had found made him pretty rich indeed. The town saw a large amount of traffic, being midway between the capital and Rione. As such, it was quite easy to buy and sell mounts. They no longer had a large amount of goods to transport, so they decided to sell the ponies. They would make the rest of the way on foot. With the loss of their pack animals, they actually made better speed. They cast weak haste as often as possible, limited only by their mana regeneration and the spell's cooldown period.
Richter allocated his 50% skill increase to air magic, not wanting to risk his percentage points being randomly assigned. That, plus their frequent practicing, allowed him to gain skill level 3. Congratulations! You have reached level 3 in air magic. Increasing level allows you to cast stronger spells. His relentless mana usage gave an added benefit. He was awarded plus 1 to his intelligence and plus 2 to wisdom from his frequent mana usage. A week later, they arrived before the walls of Law, Eve's capital city. They had passed several smaller towns over the past week, making the trip easy and comfortable. The distance they covered must have been farther than the entirety of their journey before, but the well-traveled road made it much easier to travel. While Leaf's Crossing had strong walls and some towers built in for defense, Law seemed unassailable. 100-foot-high walls were topped with crenellated battlements. The city rose up behind the wall, clearly built upon a large hill. It was hard to tell, but it looked like it was roughly built in concentric circles with the palace on top of the hill. A wide moat surrounded the city walls. The river ran behind the city, and they had dug the moat to be filled with river water. A large flow of traffic moved over the drawbridge and into the city. The guards here wore polished chainmail with halberds held upright. Just like the guards in Leaf's Crossing, they had the crest of blue swords on a green background emblazoned on their chests. The high volume of people and animals moving into the city made stopping everyone for questions unreasonable, but the hawk-eyed gaze of the guards promised swift action in response to any threat. As they moved past the initial gate and under the walls, Richter was taken aback by its 40-foot thickness. Murder holes and arrow slits could be seen in the ceiling and walls. Exiting the tunnel, there were more guards standing at attention. Most of the crowd were humans. The few non-humans that were present kept their heads down as if afraid of bringing attention to themselves. The main street of the city was a wide throughway, but dozens of avenues meandered off to either side. Richter and Sion went further into the city, and the elevation gradually rose. Their travel was only interrupted once when they passed a patrol of guards. They asked for Sion's papers, but after only a cursory inspection, they waved the two companions on. The quality of the houses and shops improved the higher they went. After walking for half an hour, they took a medium-sized street to the left. The lane curved inward, slightly following the natural curve of the hill. They slowly circled the city, looking for the inn Rosie had recommended. After being lost several times, they finally arrived at the Laughing Imp. The Laughing Imp was a good deal more boisterous than the Whistling Hen. Several patrons were slumped over the bar in varying states of intoxication. The smell of the bar was certainly not as clean as the inn they had come from, but the laughter and joy in the room had the same intensity. Sion and Richter walked to the bar and waited for a moment until a smiling barmaid came up. Bounced up would have been a better description based on her ample chest.
What can I get you, my dears?
For too long a moment, Richter stared at her as she breathed heavily, a smile on her lips. When Sion nudged him, he realized it had gotten creepy.
Yes, I need to talk to Tarad. Rosie from the Whistling Hen and Leaf's Crossing sent me.
Still smiling, she asked them to wait and moved off. She spoke to a man behind the bar who seemed to be giving the punchline of a joke based on the guffaws of the people sitting in front of him. She gestured to Richter and Sion, and he handed her an empty mug to fill. He walked over to the two companions with a broad smile and an extended hand. He was middle-aged, but not old, and had a brown beard that, while a little wild, was not completely unkempt. Richter used Analyze on him. It had become a habit with every person he saw. The skill had not yielded anything further than base information so far, but it was still good practice. Tarad, human, level 6, health 170, mana 110, stamina 160. The man's numbers were higher than expected. Most of the random town or city folk Richter had examined were level 3 or below. Not surprising, since the only way he had found to gain experience seemed to be battle or fulfilling quests.
If not for minor quests that dealt with their skill sets, most city dwellers would probably only be level one, no matter how high their individual skills were. The guards he had seen were typically level 10 or above. Calder had been level 12. When asked about it, the man had explained that he was a former soldier. All soldiers were required to fight the random monsters that occasionally cropped up and/or patrol the boundaries of the kingdom. Apparently, it was a constant struggle to defend the borders from hostile creatures or raiders. Richter reached out his hand and clasped wrists with the barkeep. "My name is Richter. I was sent by Rosie in Leaf's Crossing."
"Jelly told me that. What can I help you with?"
"We are travelers to Essaville." Tarad's smile tightened ever so slightly.
"Of course. Come with me."
They walked past the bar and into the kitchen. It was a setting of controlled chaos. The typical hustle and bustle of people performing the necessary tasks to keep a kitchen running. Tarad nodded to the various staff as he walked through to the other side and out the back door. Richter and Sion followed him outside and down into the alley. Tarad turned and looked at them with a serious expression. All the laughter and joy had gone from his face.
"You need to tell me who you are right now, and if I don't like your answers, this filth-ridden alley will be the last thing you see."
As he had been talking, three of the larger kitchen workers had filed out into the alley holding knives or cudgels. Worse, the direction Richter and Sion had been walking in ended in a blank wall and a pile of rubbish. The three men stood between them and the exit from the alley. Sion drew his sword, causing the toughs to take a threatening step forward. Knowing only seconds remained before the ground of the alley was covered with blood, quite possibly bears, Richter held out his arm with palms up. "There is no need for this. We were sent by Rosie, the owner of the Whistling Hen in Leaf's Crossing. She told me to come here and say that phrase to you. I have a village. I need specialized labor to build it into something worthwhile. She told me that many non-humans are unhappy with the new laws and are not being treated fairly. I can offer them another option. After she heard me out, she said you might know about some people that would be interested." Tarad stared at them.
"What you are saying is something that anyone would know just by simple gossip. Everyone knows the Laughing Imp welcomes non-humans. Some might use that knowledge to try and find malcontents. How do I know that you are not just trying to trick us and then throw us into the king's dungeons?"
Richter was more than a little annoyed at the treatment he and Sion were receiving.
"Listen, I'm here to offer a chance for an honest life to those who deserve it. We gave you the code word, Essaville. If you don't want to help, that's fine. We will figure out another way. But if you move any closer to me and my friend, it's very likely that this alley will be the last thing that you see," Richter warned.
The three men behind them tensed, getting ready for a fight. Richter drew his sword. It was a shame that their bows were unstrung. If Sion could shoot, the outcome of this fight wouldn't even be a question. Hopefully their armor and superior weapons would win the day. Richter had switched his respawn to the Mist Village, but the option had not come up again since they started their journey. If he died, it would take several weeks to get back here, and he would lose all of his possessions. He just hoped Sion would be able to escape.
"Stop!"
Tarad threw up his hand.
"I do not want violence, but I will not let a snake into my house. Can you prove what you are saying? Did she offer you anything that would make me believe you?"
Richter glared up at him, blade in hand. "She said you were trustworthy, but that you're also a suspicious bastard, and that you cheat when you play cards." A smile twitched on Tarad's face.
"Well, that does sound like Rosie."
"Okay. You have bought yourself a good meal and a place to stay. We will talk again in the morning."
He waved off the three men and strolled past Richter and Sion as if nothing had happened.
"We have lamb tonight. How do you like your ribs?"
With that one-liner worthy of an 80s action flick, he walked inside, still with that wry smile on his face. Richter and Sion looked at each other, and after a moment, both sheathed their swords.
"So do we go back in?" Sion asked.
"It definitely wasn't the reception I was expecting. They didn't try to rob us, though. They just acted like they had someone to protect," Richter said, pondering their options. "So we have two options. We can go back in and see what comes of it, or take our chances somewhere else in the city. Sion shrugged.
I have never had lamb before, and it did smell good.
Man logic won the day. They went back into the kitchen and walked through to the common room. The people there were laughing and enjoying their food with no idea of the violence and death that had almost occurred only a dozen yards away. It was a good lesson, Richter thought. Even though they had left the woods, there was still plenty of danger in the city. The cute barmaid met them as they left the kitchen and led them back to a table. She quickly brought two square wooden plates topped with meat, green vegetables, and chunks of bread still steaming from the oven. They both asked her for an ale, and then tucked into the meal. Whatever else could be said of their reception at the Laughing Imp, the food was wonderful. Both sat in silence, devoted to their meal, and when second helpings were offered, they both gladly accepted. Richter looked at his small friend, polishing off his second plate, and wondered where it all went. An hour after they sat down, Tirad came by the table and dropped off their room key. He only paused long enough to tell them that their room was on the third floor, second door on the left. Then he disappeared back into the kitchen. They sat there a while longer before deciding to call it a night. Their room here was much the same as their room in the Whistling Hen, maybe a touch bigger, and the mattress slightly smellier. Richter and Sion looked at each other, and with silent understanding, moved one bed against the door, and the second bed against the first. Feeling safer, they both laid down for the night, but kept their weapons close at hand. They woke the next morning to a rapping on the door.
"Tirad would like to see you downstairs,"
a feminine voice called out, and then footsteps could be heard walking away from the door and moving downstairs. They both shouldered their packs and moved the beds away from the door to walk down to the common room. The bar area smelled surprisingly fresh. The windows had been opened up, and a light rain was falling outside. From the scent in the air, someone had either burned incense or thrown sweetgrass on the fire, which still had smoldering embers from last night. They found Tirad at a central table, smiling and drinking tea. When he saw them, he waved them over, gesturing that they should join him. As they sat down, he poured more tea from the pot into two ready cups.
"Let us get something out of the way," Tirad said after they had joined him. "I want to apologize about last night. I had a few friends ask around, and we found a courier who remembered seeing you entering Leaf's Crossing at the time you say. Luckily, a man and a sprite are an uncommon enough sight to merit recall. He remembered you talking to a local guard, and it seemed like you were being shook down."
The guard's name was Calder. He actually was not a bad guy in the end. It was only because of his recommendation that we ended up at the Whistling Hen.
Tirad nodded.
"It sounds like you were lucky to meet him. The situation in law is worse than Rosie probably knows. The regulations have grown stricter. Because of that, some non-humans have started to leave. For a while, that wasn't a problem. The king didn't concern himself with the odd non-human that wanted to go elsewhere. When the skilled craftsmen started to leave, however, the humans who had been profiting from their labor started to complain. I don't know if Rosie explained, but all actual business in Eve must be conducted through humans. The human, or representative as they are called, is often allocated by the government. These have become coveted positions. It is basically a way to make money with little effort. The representatives shave off as much money as they want, so when that income was threatened by the non-humans leaving, the representatives complained. Their government cronies passed another law making it illegal to even leave the kingdom without permission. Anyone caught in the attempt is either released with all of their property confiscated, imprisoned, or put back to work with their loved ones detained to ensure their cooperation.
That's horrible, Richter said sincerely. I had no idea things were that bad here.
I am a known opponent of the new laws. I hope you can now understand my skepticism and caution when someone walks up to me out of the blue asking about such a sensitive topic.
Richter nodded, not willing to completely forget the scene last night, but the explanation made Tirad's actions understandable, if not immediately forgivable.
The courier confirming your story was a point for you, so I appreciate you accepting my apology. But despite the fact that you seem like a likable guy, if you want my help and trust, you need to answer some questions to prove yourself. Now where is this village you need help with?
It's in the forest of Nadria. I'm not willing to give any specific directions for security reasons.
The forest isn't a safe place. No offense,
Tirad said, looking at Sion.
But even your people have been known to claim lives if your territory is infringed upon. And the wood sprites are about the most benevolent force that I know of in that region.
Richter gave a small smile. That's actually how we met. Me almost getting shot full of sprite arrows. The wood sprites and I now have a good relationship. Though my village's defenses are strong, I won't promise absolute safety. I don't think that exists in any world. But for those who choose to come with me, I offer the chance to be part of something potentially wonderful.
I don't like the lack of information, but that brings us to the main point. Trust. I don't put much faith in words. Actions. Actions are something I can believe in,
Tirad said, trailing off and making it clear that there was more to be said. Sion leaned in.
Just tell us what you want us to do. What is going to gain us your ever-so-valuable trust?
Tirad put a large smile on his face.
Why, all I want you to do is to help you help yourselves.
Chapter 20, Day 43, Shaban 31, 15386 ABG.
Richter learned that Tirad and other sympathetic humans had started to ferry non-humans out of the city. They had to reach out to various groups, not all reputable, to accomplish this. One of the groups was a local gang called the Nightblades. The plan had been for the non-humans to make it to the sewers under the city, and the Nightblades would help them out of the city from there. Apparently, the first half had gone smoothly, but the Nightblades had sent a message to Tirad's compatriots that 5 coppers per head would have to be paid, or they would send the non-humans to the King's Guard. A silver coin was apparently the standard bounty for runaways. The Blades had said they were giving Tirad and his colleagues a bargain.
We know where our people are being held. There are many people who disagree with the king's laws. They help how they can, like with this information, but not many are fighters. I have 5 good men that can hold their own and 7 more who are willing to fight. What I am saying is we need a bit more muscle. If you help us, I will spread your request to the non-humans. I will also help arrange travel for anyone that wants to leave the city. Will you fight?
You have been offered a quest. Fight for those who cannot won. A group of non-humans is being held for ransom. Tirad will help you, but only if you help him first. He needs your aid to free the captured non-humans from the thieves. Reward: increased reputation with the non-humans of Eve. Possible colonists to come live in the Mist Village, yes or no?
Richter looked at Sion, who gave him a nod. Looking back at Tirad, he asked, What's the plan?
I need to get some things together, rally the troops, as it were. Is there anything else you need to do in the city?
I need to sell some gems. I also have a magic staff to sell.
I know 2 reliable merchants. Is there anything else?
This might be a long shot, but do you know anyone that can teach me magic spells?
Mage guilds are sometimes willing to sell lesser spells, but really anything stronger.
We are new to our magic. Higher level spells are most likely beyond us anyway.
Go to Aldemar's Focus. It's where I was going to send you to sell that staff anyway. Walk uphill past 2 rows of buildings and then go left. Circle 1/4 of the city and you'll see a string of shops. Aldemar's has purple windows and a blue door. I only ask that you return by 5 bells after midday.
Richter and Sion assured him that they would, and then they left. They decided to see the merchant first, in case they needed more coin to buy whatever spells were available. His shop was only a short walk from the inn. Walking in, they were greeted with a practiced smile.
Gentlemen, please come in. Whatever you are looking for, I am sure I can help you find it. And if not, I am sure I can provide something even better. Huzzah!
The merchant wore a white turban with a colorful feather coming from the front. He was older, and couldn't have been an inch or two over 5 feet. He carried more than a little weight around his middle. His clothes were loose silk, and he had a red sash tied around his waist. Amused by the round merchant's demeanor, Richter smiled and said, "Tarad sent us. He said that you could be trusted to treat us fairly." The merchant's eyes grew somewhat large in alarm.
"Yes, of course! Please tell Master Tarad that as always, Hafiz is a humble servant and is happy to help. And if friends of his are already friends of mine..."
Richter was somewhat surprised by the reaction. Just what kind of rep did the innkeeper have? Richter decided that since an honest merchant was most likely as rare and precious a sight as a comet, he would not question his good fortune. "I'm actually here to sell some jewels. They were, part of an inheritance." Richter pulled out the small chest from the Mist Village vault and opened it.
"Sir, please be careful. That much wealth would be worth all of our lives."
The portly man came from behind the counter and rushed past them to the door. He closed and locked it while looking out the windows to make sure no one had been looking in. Satisfied that they had not been observed, the merchant walked back behind the counter and drew aside a curtain. Hafiz motioned for Richter and Sion to follow him.
"You seem to be showing us a great deal of trust," Richter said.
"You have been sent by Tarad, which means a great deal. You also seem like a good sort overall. Finally, you walked in with a chest of jewels that is most likely worth more than my shop. Not many thieves try to rob you with a golden blade encrusted with diamonds."
Richter smiled. "Those are some good points. Either way, thank you for your trust, and I promise you that it's not misplaced." Hafiz walked over to a small table with a stool. Several large lamps made the room well lit despite the lack of windows.
"Please, place the chest on the table, good sir."
Richter laid the chest on the table, and Hafiz began removing the gems one by one. He held each close to his face, looking through a small eyepiece that emitted a soft orange glow. He examined each and made notations on a small piece of paper.
"This will take a while, sir. Please feel free to peruse my goods while you wait. There are many different goods up front, but my elite stock is on these back shelves. I invite your companion to stay with me. Always best to keep each other honest, huzzah!"
Smiling again at the strange little man, Richter went back to the front of the shop. Sion decided to stay with the merchant as suggested. Richter walked through the front and found several useful items: rope, flint and steel, oil, and other sundry items. He gathered them on the counter and then moved to the back again to see the merchant's elite items. The lowest shelves held gems and jewelry. Since he had come to sell jewels, those shelves did not keep his interest. What he found above was much more interesting, however. The first thing his eyes were drawn to was a glass display filled with arrowheads. They all had a slight glow to them. "You have found Steel Arrowhead of Dispelling. Durability 9 of 9. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits: 51% chance to dispel active enchantments on target. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Flame. Durability 7 of 7. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits: will do an additional 8 to 11 damage on impact. Chance to cause burn. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Stun. Durability 9 of 9. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits: 46% chance to stun target for 6 to 8 seconds. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Negation. Durability 8 of 8. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits: chance to ignore magical defenses. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Weak Poison. Durability 7 of 7. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits: chance to poison target for an additional 3 to 4 damage for 6 to 8 seconds. You have found High Steel Arrowhead of Freeze. Durability 10 of 10. Item class uncommon. Quality superb. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits, plus 1 damage. We'll do an additional 7 to 9 cold damage on impact. 7% chance to cause freeze for 7 seconds. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Piercing. Durability 8 of 8. Item class, uncommon. Quality, superb. Weight, 0.1 kilograms. Traits, will ignore up to 43% of opponent's armor. You have found Steel Arrowhead of Confusion. Durability 10 of 10. Item class, uncommon. Quality, superb. Weight, 0.1 kilograms. Traits, target may attack anyone near, including possibly allies. Jackpot! Richter moved the box of arrowheads to the front counter. He also found various other items that would come in handy. You have found Ring of Health. Durability 11 of 11. Item class uncommon. Quality above average. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits. Increase maximum health by plus 24. He found 4 of those. You have found Ring of Mana. Durability 9 of 9. Item class uncommon. Quality well-crafted. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits. Increase maximum mana by plus 31. You have found Belt of Strength. Durability 40 of 40. Item class scarce. Quality superb. Weight 1.1 kilograms. Traits. Increase strength by plus 4. The last item that caught his attention was a black satchel sitting at the end of the shelf. You have found Bag of Holding. Durability 50 of 50. Item class, rare. Quality, exquisite. Weight, 1.0 kilograms plus 0.1 times total weight of items. Traits, can hold large amount of items. Contents of bag will only be 10% of normal weight. Thinking of desired object will retrieve it from bag. Item is soulbound. It cannot be lost or stolen. Can only be transferred with an open heart. At last! What Richter had been missing more than anything else from his game days was the inventory that was present in every RPG. Having to actually schlep everything he wanted to carry was a real pain in the butt. Anyone who has had to walk back from the store carrying bags of groceries would know what he was talking about. He held the bag almost reverently as he placed it on the counter. By the time he was done perusing, Hafiz was putting down his ledger, done cataloging the stones in the chest.
Truly, good sir, you are truly blessed to have found such a rich trove of jewels.
Are they really that good?
Oh, yes! My monocle of identification was made by the finest elvish glasssmiths and then enchanted by one of the master light mages of the Illuminator Guild. I would stake my reputation by this ledger.
The trader's voice betrayed excitement, but then he sighed.
As I suspected, I can only afford a portion of these stones.
The merchant pushed about a fifth of the stones to the side, and they looked mostly to be only the semi-precious stones.
These stones are worth roughly 310 gold.
Richter coughed, his mouth open in shock. That was $31,000. He was hoping that the gems would cover his costs, but if Hafiz was correct, his chest was worth more than 100 grand, maybe closer to 2 or even 3. Hafiz misunderstood Richter's expression.
I promise you, sir, that this is a fair price. I am an honest merchant, and especially would not cheat a friend of Mr. Tarad.
Richter closed his mouth and assured the man that he trusted his good intentions. Mollified, Hafiz continued.
I have this amount in gold bands.
He laid 2-finger-length rectangular bars of gold down on the table, along with a heavy bag and 10 individual gold coins. Seeing Richter's questioning look, he explained,
Each of these bars is the equivalent of 100 gold coins. Now, if you allow me, I can see what you have picked from my stock, and we can do the rest in trade.
The rotund man walked up to the counter, making short oohs and ahs as he lined up each item and placed a gem next to each. The arrowheads equated a thumbnail-sized jade and large amber. The rings, a slightly larger turquoise and 2 pearls. The belt of strength, a square-cut emerald. And the basic items he piled together equated to a tiger's eye. When he came to the bag, however, he looked at Richter for a moment and then firmly placed two diamonds in front of it. Richter coughed in shock. He knew, because of the bag's stats, as well as its usefulness, it would be expensive, but good God! Two diamonds that size probably meant he was paying as much for that bag as he had for his first car. Suddenly an argument with his ex-girlfriend came to mind where she criticized him for wasting money on video games, and he threw her expensive purse collection back at her. She had, of course, responded, "It's an investment!" His response that maybe math wasn't her strong suit had not gone well. Live and learn. Maybe if the purse had been able to fold space to make a pocket dimension, then she would have had a point, though. Even though it was painful, he looked Hafiz in the eye and nodded his assent. The man grinned broadly and clapped his hands.
"Praise to the Lord of Commerce! Let us both profit from this day! Huzzah!"
Shaking hands, they finished the deal. Richter was surprised when Hafiz reached out with both hands and laid them on the bag. A white light emanated from his hands, and when he removed them, a clear gem sat on the bag. At the merchant's gesture, Richter picked up the gem and was greeted with the prompt. "Would you like to take ownership of this bag of holding, yes or no?" Choosing yes, the gem disappeared, and he found a new small icon in the corner of his vision, which looked like the black bag. Selecting it, a 20x20 empty grid appeared. Unable to keep a look of childlike glee from his face, he began placing and then removing items from the bag. Just as described, as soon as he reached into the bag, he simply had to focus on the object he wanted and it would materialize in his hand, ready to be pulled out. He placed the magic staff in, and sure enough, its entire length disappeared into the bag. The staff took up a 3x1 area of the grid. He then decided to put a copper, silver, and gold coin in the bag and retrieved each in turn. He might be excited, but he wasn't about to throw all of his money into a black hole without making sure he could get it back first. Seeing as it was a success, though, he placed the gold bands as well as his coins into the bag of holding. Thieves had been a major concern for him since coming to the city, but now he could rest relatively easier, needing only to keep track of the one bag. Each type of coin took up one slot in the bag and clearly displayed the amount of each. He placed the rest of the gems back in the chest and placed it into the bag. Spending a few more moments, he transferred over the contents of his old pack. Each herb stacked and made it much easier to organize. The bag was amazing. Best of all, it was soulbound. He finally didn't need to worry about losing all of his items if he died again.
"Is there anything else I can do for you, good sir?" Hafiz asked.
"Do you have any maps, magic or otherwise?"
"I have a few regular maps of the surrounding areas and waterways."
Hafiz's face adopted a speculative look.
"I also have one other item. Please give me a moment, sir."
The white-clad merchant walked to the back. He came back after a few minutes. In his hands was a 2-foot-long parchment that was bound with a green and yellow striped ribbon.
"This is a traveler's map, sir. Are you familiar with their guild?"
Richter shook his head.
"They are a potpourri of different races. Some are magic users, others are fighters, some are simple woodsmen, and the only thing they have in common is a love of travel. Either singly or in groups, they move across the land and create maps of the world. They sell these for exorbitant fees to the rich and powerful. The price is paid, however, because this is actually an extremely versatile tool. It provides access to whatever information the traveler imparted to this map. You can even access the map mentally without opening the physical scroll. Finally, owning the parchment lets you add your own geographic information. As the map is bound to you, the physical map will only show information that you wish shared."
Richter's fingers started to tingle. The items sounded amazing. As the description grew more detailed, however, Richter's heart began to sink. This must be an item of incredible cost. True, he probably had the gems to pay for it, but Richter was not one to squander money. He might be looking at an eternity here, and being careless with money today could mean centuries of hard times ahead.
The reluctance on his face must have been apparent. Hafiz moderated his excited tone.
As I said, normally this is only an item for the wealthiest of patrons, but the information contained within is only as current as when the map was made. The particular traveler that made the map lived at least 200 years ago, possibly a good deal longer ago than that. It was found in the belongings of a recently departed nobleman. His family had fallen on hard times because of his love of the bottle. As such, he left his children with few assets and even less regard for him. They sold his items quickly and cheaply. So you see, with this particular map, I have no idea about the usefulness of any of the information contained within. The enchantments will still work either way, though, sir, so it is a valuable item nonetheless. If you are interested, I could relinquish it for only one more small diamond.
Richter understood what Hafiz was saying. The information was most likely hopelessly out of date. It was a risk to buy it. Admittedly, he could make his own maps, and so the item was very useful in and of itself. Zetrix, the imp, had said the land was bigger than the earth. If that was true, he had seen less than 1% of 1% so far. Richter weighed the pros and cons and decided that even if the traveler's information was useless, the map itself was a good investment in his future. After all, GMaps had been about the most used app on his phone. He did need to know one thing, though. How much are these diamonds worth, Hafiz?
Well, sir, each is high quality and cut finely. So per carat, each will be worth 50 gold coins.
Richter's eyes bulged again. $5,000. He dreaded asking the next question, but couldn't help himself. So how many carats were in the diamonds I have already traded you?
The diamonds you traded for the bag were 2 carats each. I will trade the map for this other diamond, which is a bit over 1 carat,
the merchant replied promptly. Richter sighed deeply. He almost wished he didn't know. His calculations had been off. Those 2 diamonds had been worth more than his first car. A lot more. He tried to comfort himself that he couldn't take it with him when he died, but he realized that now he could. He could and would take it with him. He tried to focus on the big picture, but his mind shouted that 25,000 bucks worth of stones was a pretty damn big picture. Richter finally closed his eyes and rubbed the spot on his ears that always relaxed him. He had followed George Takai on Facebook when he was back on Earth, and one day it had showed a pressure point called Shenmen. Apparently it translated to Heavenly Gate. He had tried rubbing it and actually found it was very relaxing. He closed his eyes to try to find the same peace with the gentle massage. Surprisingly, a prompt came up. It was very strange seeing something, even with his eyes closed. Congratulations! You have learned the subskill Pressure Points. Certain points on bodies can harm or heal. In unarmed combat, certain spots will draw your attention, and you will know intuitively what they do. This is a subskill of unarmed combat. As you have learned this subskill, you have also learned unarmed combat. Congratulations! You have learned the skill unarmed combat. You can attack and defend yourself without the crutch of weapons.
Thank you, Hikaru Sulu!
Richter was stacking up these skills! Taking his new skill as an omen, he nodded to Hafiz and pushed the diamond across the table, picking up the map. How do I use it? Hafiz touched the map, and again, a white light flared, leaving a clear ownership gem in its place.
Simply break the seal and pick up the gem, he said.
Richter did as instructed. You have found Traveler's Map. Would you like to accept ownership, yes or no? As if he had paid all that dough for nothing. He accepted yes, and a small map icon appeared at the corner of his gaze. The gem crumpled to dust after he accepted ownership. He selected the icon, and a translucent, almost opaque screen appeared to fill most of his visual field. It was like looking down from above. The map was centered on Law, and the city took up about half the screen. But what if I want to see more or a different scale, Richter thought.
Immediately, a bar appeared vertically at the edge of the map. Focusing, he could make the slider on the bar move up and down, and the map zoomed in and out. At maximum zoom, Richter could make out individual streets in the city. At minimal zoom, the map showed Law as a small circle. The Kingdom of Eve was a roughly circular patch of green with a dotted line surrounding it. To the east of the kingdom was a yellow patch written as Plains of Gold, and just north were the Singing Hills and Whisper Woods of Grevent. Richter could see the serrated mountains, and north of them was the Kingdom of Rion, but it was called the Villages of Rion. Several other small kingdoms dotted the map. Farther north was a large swath of grayed-out area called simply the Wilds. The Forest of Nadria occupied the right side of the map. Going to medium zoom, many dungeons, caves, crypts, and other points of interest could be seen. It was strange that some areas had more color on the map and others were almost monochromatic. He soon figured out that the colored areas followed his own path since coming to the land. He had to guess that more color meant more current information. The map was amazing! He zoomed out to maximum, and the colored part of the map became a small island in a sea of black. He zoomed back in. Off to the bottom right, there was a small glowing arrow. Richter changed his focus, and the map slid in that direction, no longer focused on the kingdom. It moved past the forest, over the open ocean, and then settled over a series of islands. The map named them the Isles of Lanyu. On the second biggest was a glowing marker. When he zoomed in, he saw a small dilapidated castle. Another prompt filled the screen. You have discovered the lost citadel of the Mage Pequottle. You have been offered a quest. Right an ancient wrong one. The traveler that made this map accepted a quest that remains undone, as he is now dead, and no previous owners of this map have completed it. The task now falls to you. You must travel to the Lost Citadel and find the remains of the Mage Pequottle. Unlock the mystery of the Lost Citadel. Reward unknown. Yes or no? A lost castle on a hidden island discovered on a treasure map? Yes, please. It seemed like the kind of quest that gave legendary or even artifact gear. It also seemed like the kind of quest that had monsters that would use his balls for jujubes at his current level. Looking closely at the map, he saw that the citadel was considered a time-worn dungeon. That meant it was at least 1,000 years old, and possibly up to 10,000 years old. He couldn't tackle it at his current low level, but that wouldn't always be a problem now, would it? No, it would not. Richter thought with a smile. Then he thought, it's kind of creepy to be talking to yourself in the third person. I need to stop this. He dismissed the map. A second prompt had been hidden behind the first. Hafiz had been looking at him as he worked with the map's functions.
Are you satisfied with your purchase, sir?
Oh, yes, Richter replied with a smile.
Huzzah! Most happy to have been of service then,
Hafiz replied with a smile of his own.
I will allow you to peruse these other standard maps as part of the price of the diamond. Now, is there anything else I can help you with?
Not right now, but I may need a varied amount of items later. I will need them brought to Leaf's Crossing and perhaps even further. Can you arrange that?
I am ever your humble servant, good sir,
Hafiz said, bowing his head. Hafiz handed him a bundle of arrow shafts to affix the arrowheads. Richter had said he was going to use his sprite arrows, but Sion had told him mixing magic was never wise. He warned that even imbuing an arrow that was already enchanted could be dangerous unless you had a strong control of the flow of magic. Deciding to follow his friend's advice, Richter thanked Hafiz and accepted the shafts. He then equipped his rings and belt. He felt a perceptible change in his body as it filled out slightly, reflecting his increased stats. Shaking hands with the merchant one last time, Richter and Sion left the shop. Two bells tolled as they walked outside, letting them know there wasn't much time left before they had to meet back at the inn. They followed Tarad's instructions to reach Aldama's Focus. The storefront looked much as Tarad had explained it. The panes of purple glass were varied in color. As they walked into the door, they heard a chime. A tall man came to the front. Not wasting any time, Richter said, "Tarad sent us."
"What does he need?"
the man asked curtly.